Welcome to the Azure Security Podcast, where we discuss topics relating to security, privacy, reliability, and compliance on the Microsoft Cloud Platform.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 105. This week is myself, Michael, with Mark and Sarah. And our guest this week is Merrill Fernando. He's here to talk to us about a kind of Entra ID and some of the tooling that he's worked on over the years. But before we get to our guest, let's take a little lap around the news. Sarah, why don't you kick things off?
Well, it'll depend when you edit this, but at the time we're recording this, it is next week, it is Microsoft Ignite. So depending on when you listen to this, that might have already happened. If it has already happened, then we will upload lots of sessions on YouTube so you can watch them later. If it hasn't happened, then of course, remember that the in-person tickets are sold out, but you can still watch the live stream for free. For better or worse, you'll get to watch me doing some of the interstitial programming, that's what it's called, the bits in between the exciting bits, but I get to interview some cool people. So of course, go check out Ignite. And if this is post Ignite, which is the 18th to 22nd of November 2024, you can go and catch up on sessions online. And of course, there's lots of announcements about things. That's all I can say. So go and check that out. So that's my first one. That's taking up a lot of my time at the moment, pretty much every waking hour, actually. Then next up, we have support for FIDO2 authentication. In fact, our guest probably knows more about that than I do. But we're of course supporting passkeys for passwordless authentication. We're all trying to move there, and non-phishable creds. So of course, the more you can use that, the better. And then finally, last but not least from me, confidential containers are now in public preview on Azure Red Hat OpenShift. So we love a confidential container because it means that it's cloud native confidential computing and there's a trusted execution environment. So you can have everything nice and secure and it runs in its own little enclave, I believe is the correct word. So go check that out if that's something you're interested in using. And that's me done for the news.
All right, I have a few items. The first one is there's now REST endpoints, REST APIs for managing private endpoints in Fabric. This allows you ultimately to help, you know, sort of automate and streamline workflows because now you have access to these APIs, which, you know, historically you didn't have. Next one is Application Insights availability tests. TLS 1.0 and 1.1 is being retired. This will take effect, I believe, March the 1st, 2025. So you do have plenty of time. But, you know, at the end of the day, that day is going to creep up on you. And if you're not ready for it, then any client code that you have that's not using TLS 1.2 or 1.3 is going to break. There's no fallback at that point. And in fact, there's going to be a note as well, because there's another item, which is just an overarching update on the retirement of TLS 1.0 and 1.1 across various Azure services. Again, this is something that you're going to see across every single Azure service. So you really need to start working on all your clients, verify that your client code is using TLS 1.2 and above. What that really means from a programmatic perspective is make sure you're not hard coding things like TLS 1.0 and 1.1, or you're using, for example, really, really old runtimes or really old versions of browsers or operating systems or, you know, mobile operating systems that don't support TLS 1.2 and 1.3. The original announcement for this was actually made in November the 10th, 2023, so a year ago. So I'll give you a list or a link to a page that just has some updated information about how you can make sure that you're ready for this transition. I think the overarching transition is going to be end of August 2025. But again, you know, things in the rear vision mirror are closer than they seem. So yeah, don't you know, sort of do nothing about this. And because when the time comes, stuff's just not going to work. Okay, that's all I have in the area of news.
So in my world, kind of piggybacking off of what Sarah was talking about, I will be at Ignite as well. So I'm going to be speaking on the Friday there. We're going to be talking about the top 10 Zero Trust controls that you can implement today. So very much focused on actionable guidance for Zero Trust there. And I'm going to be sharing the stage actually with someone from NIST, Marusha Supaya, as well as from one of our customers in a large Swedish bank. So really really excited to be presenting with Marusha and Ulf and talking through, you know, what they've learned on their Zero Trust journey and their actionable tips as well. The other thing that happened recently was I spoke at the Open Group conference in Houston, Texas, and we kind of unveiled our vision for, you know, what we're setting out to solve with those security standards. For those that aren't aware, I'm the security forum chair for the Open Group, so help guide and steward those standards and figure out, you know, what we need to be doing there and all that kind of stuff. And you know, very interesting kind of different role for me to be working through that. And I figured, you know, hey, if I'm in the role, I might as well do something good with it. And so we're working on filling the gaps, building on existing standards, kind of connecting the dots and addressing some of the things that just aren't addressed or aren't addressed well in industry. So, you know, things like mapping it to, you know, the defenders to the attacker's activity, defining the security roles in sort of a relatable kind of normal way, just connecting the dots between a whole lot of things. So got some exciting stuff. We'll have some webinars that we'll be doing here in the next couple months probably to kind of reprise that on a kind of live broadcast medium. So that's the main stuff. And I'll throw in a few links to some of the existing Open Group standards there for folks to check out. But that's all I've got.
So now we're going to move on to our guest, Merrill Fernando, who is a principal product manager in Entra. He also lives in the same town as me, but ironically, when we're recording this, he's actually in Sydney. So Merrill, welcome. Do you want to tell us, well, quickly introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a bit about yourself?
Thanks a lot, Sarah. So I'm super excited to be here as a guest. My name is Merrill Fernando. I'm a CXP or Customer Experience Principal Product Manager in the Microsoft Entra team. And yeah, I love building tools and helping the community and connecting folks in the community in cybersecurity. And yeah, I spend way too much time than I should on LinkedIn and Twitter and Blue Sky and all the social media accounts. That's me.
So while we're talking about sort of, you know, what we're going to talk about on this this episode, one thing that became abundantly obvious is that you've worked on a lot of tools over the years. So we're going to talk about some of those tools. So let's just get started with the first of those tools, which is Maester. So my first question is, what on earth is Maester and what does it do?
Thanks. Yes. So I'll tell you a story because that's how I like to introduce all these different tools. They always start with some story. So with Maester, I was helping a customer. They were going through troubleshooting some conditional access policy and we were trying to work through that. And while we were looking at that, we just realized that they had a CA policy they had targeted for a group, like all the guests in their tenant. And that group, they had a policy which said guests, you know, need to sign in every day because they could be coming in from unmanaged devices and their tokens could be stolen and like they needed to secure it. So they had created this policy and they thought it was all good and their tenant was secured. But about 10 months ago, someone had gone in and either they deleted the group or they just cleared out all the users in that group. So this policy was sitting there. They thought the policy was working, but there was no protection for them. The guests were happily signing in and staying on with, you know, long-lived tokens, which could be stolen, as we know, and people could be replaying them, and their tenant was not secure. So this got me thinking about how I can bring some of my DevOps, SecDevOps practices to identity and improve, you know, move the industry forward in applying SecDevOps practices to identity and things like the control plane in conditional access. So I got together with a few MVPs, Fabian, who had created something for Sentinel based on PowerShell PESTA testing framework, and Thomas Nornheim is another MVP in Germany who did a lot of Entra config settings, like how to harden your environment. So we got together and we built out Maester, which is like a PowerShell-based test automation framework. We started with Entra, but it's like we launched in March last. It's grown so much that we have people contributing. We have like 50, 60 plus contributors, about 200 plus checks. People have written like ready-made checks. I built it for, you know, writing tests for your own config, but people have started plugging in like the CISA tests for Exchange, for Azure, for Intune. And so it's become this huge open source framework, and folks are starting to use it in like really new and innovative ways to make sure their cloud config is what they think it is, you know, just not hoping that no one went in and made a change that they don't know about. So that's Maester.
So Meryl, so I do have to ask, so where does the word Maester even come from?
Cool. Yes. So Maester comes from the Game of Thrones. And in for those who watched the show or read the books know that Maesters in the Game of Thrones world, they were the learned people, the wisest folks. That's who people went to get advice. And they lived in this tower with the light, with the fire that always kept burning. And they held all the knowledge. So I needed something that I could get a domain, you know, the domain on, and something that people could easily remember. So yeah, all of that combination came together, and I didn't want to name it Microsoft Cloud Security Test Automation Framework, which would have been the typical name. So we just shortened it to, we just came up with Maester for that.
I may actually be the only person in the world who has not seen Game of Thrones or read the books, but it is what it is, I guess.
So, Michael, you're not alone in not having seen or read Game of Thrones. So you have company. So at least two of us on this podcast share that. So something that's near and dear to my heart is I really love the work that your team has done on the Zero Trust workshop that recently was announced and released publicly. So can you tell our folks about that?
Yes, absolutely. So the team that I'm in, I'm part of the Entra product group, and we focus on Entra, and we help customers deploy Entra, secure Entra, harden it, you know, what are the right conditional access policies, what they need to do, and how they can plan out, because a lot of our customers don't know how, like, they've got Entra when they got M365. They don't really, they haven't really done the work to go through and look at how they've deployed, whether they've deployed all of the features that are there. Like my day job is literally getting folks to deploy and use the features they've already paid for and secure their tenant. So I'm from the Entra team, and we have counterparts in the Intune team, in Defender, in Purview, like the whole of the security org. Our day job is helping a lot of our customers deploy things. And what we found out over time is we had a lot of knowledge in what someone needs to do. Like we could go through and ask questions and then come up and say, okay, you need to do this first before you can do this. For example, if you want to do like device compliance checks in conditional access, then you first need to do hybrid join or intra join. And then, you know, you might not have configured the connect sync properly. So you need to do that first if the devices are not being synced. So there's a like a sequence to do things. And like we knew it, we could just explain it to people, but most folks didn't know like where they should start. And Zero Trust has always been, people sell it as, you know, just deploy this one product and you have Zero Trust. But it's like a more holistic thing that you would need to do, especially the Microsoft Security Suite. We have so much and folks don't know where they should begin. So that's how we came up with this idea of let's help people and make it really short and succinct and give them a blueprint. Let's help them assess and how, and give them a roadmap for the next like 2 to 3 years on how they can be well deployed with a, you know, a proper Zero Trust framework across all of the products. And so that's how we got together and started brainstorming ways how we can do this. And we really wanted to scale it. Like it was not scalable with me doing like 2 or 3 customers at a time. We wanted it to help our whole industry move forward in adopting these practices. So the Zero Trust workshop, we just launched it last week, and there are lots of options. People can self-serve and go through the workshops. We do like 1 to 2 hour workshops with each pillar in Zero Trust. Right now it's launched with identity, devices, and data, and we plan to add the others in. So it could be a self-service thing. It could be you could bring in a Microsoft partner who we trained on, and they can help guide you through. It can be through our teams like Microsoft Fast Track, etc. You can reach out to Microsoft account team, and they can help you with that. And for our own customers who we manage, we run these as well with them. So at the end of these workshops, they get like a ready-made customized map of what they should do. It's broken down into first, then next, and sort of guides them. So they have, it's really useful. I know some of my customers got like funding from their stakeholders by showing this, and they were able to then actually go ahead and implement it over the next 2 years. So we've been running this in private preview for about 2 years and refining it with like 70 plus large customers who gave us a lot of feedback. And it's a continuous, like it's a living thing that we're building, and we're going to keep on evolving this as we as new threats come on board and we have new features and so on. So that's ak.ms/ZT workshop.
Yeah, and if I can add on there, like one of the things that it just always fascinates me about security, because we also have a set of workshops that we deliver through our Unified around the Security Adoption Framework, or SAF. And those generally hang out at the architecture level and at the program and metrics and success and, you know, architecture and how it all fits together kind of thing. But then there was this entire layer that we missed that your team did a great job on, for that sort of, okay, what are the technical features and capabilities that need to be turned on? And then, of course, there's the how to actually turn them on. And it's just one of the things that I'm always amazed at is just how complex security is, because there's so many different people that need to be doing those jobs. And that doesn't even get into, you know, all the business teams and all the other things that need to happen as well. So it's always amazing to me how much needs to get down and done, and you know, how important it is to have those prescriptive first, next, later kind of checklists for those different abstraction levels and roles.
Yeah, one of the key things we do in the workshop, we ask that they bring all the stakeholders. Like when you're doing zero trust, it can't be just identity. So even though we might be doing an identity workshop, it can't be just the identity folks. You need the devices folks, because you need to protect the device they're coming in from. You need the SIEM and the SOC team. You need the security architects in there. And a lot of the times we notice that this was the first time that all of them sat in one room. Because you end up with a lot of folks, you know, working in silos, especially in large enterprises. And it, like, half of the time, it's mostly folks talking to each other for the very first time and collaborating and thinking about what the overall security posture should be, because it's not a one-size-fits-all. If you're in mining versus education or in fintech, you have different challenges, and the priorities and what you consider as your zero trust baseline differs. But yeah, this bringing of all of the folks together is a thing that I learned has not been happening quite a lot, and the workshops are really powerful when you can bring all of those key stakeholders and those different teams together to go through what zero trust means for them, and then help them look at what their gaps are in where they stand today.
Yeah, we see the same thing. It's so important to break the silos apart. There's almost like a joke in there around, you know, the one thing that we all have in common is that we don't talk to each other. But yeah, we see that dynamic a lot, and it's just amazing how much magic happens when people start talking about it to each other about, hey, how do we drive this outcome that requires your expertise, my expertise, and each of the tools that we manage and technologies and whatnot.
All right, so a couple of other tools that you have, Merrill. The first one is, I don't know if these two are related or if they're sort of back-to-back or whatever, but Graph X-Ray and Graph Permissions Explorer. So could you explain sort of what problem you're trying to solve with those and how you go about it?
Yes, so Graph X-Ray is a tool. It's a Chrome extension. You can think of it like Fiddler for Microsoft Graph. You can run Fiddler to see what's happening behind the scenes. So when you go to the portal, and when you click on different things, you can, you do something, right? So my struggle I had was I was writing PowerShell scripts, and I would go and create a group, like a dynamic group, or I would go and create a conditional access policy or going to Intune and configure whole compliance policy and so on. And then I knew how to do it in the UI, but then to write the script took me a while, and we didn't have ChatGPT like a few years back. But even that, I had to tell it, you know, describe all of what I wanted to do even today. So I knew how to do things in the UI, and I wanted to get to the code as soon as possible from that point. And it took a while to go search the docs and find out the API and find out the parameters I needed to pass, and would take me like half an hour to an hour to figure out like how to do something. So with Graph X-Ray, it's an extension you install, and you just do the action in the portal. And if the portal is using Graph X-Ray, it'll give you the PowerShell command for the action that you just did. So if I created a dynamic group, it'll give you the exact command for doing that. It also supports multiple languages, C#, JavaScript, Go. So you can just flick through and get to the code just from the portal itself. So it helps quite a lot when it comes to DevOps and automation, and you need to create like 100 access packages. You can do one and use Graph X-Ray to see what's happening behind the scenes. So it's more, it's like a DevOps tooling that I built to help in that scenario. It came out as part of a hackathon we did about three, four years ago. So Graph Permissions is a website that I built. The problem I was trying to solve there is the docs in the Microsoft docs for the Graph APIs are all focused for developers. So you can go find out an API like create an Azure, create a conditional access policy or some other config in Graph, maybe create a Microsoft Teams site. But you couldn't find out, like if I give something permission like sites.read.all, what is it that a developer can do? Like what are all the APIs they have access to? So I had a security architect come and ask me, hey, someone's asking me for this permission, which is, you know, files.read.write.all or directory.read.all. What am I actually giving them when I give them this access? And the answer that I had to give him was, you need to go through search for this and look at all the APIs and, you know, any of those APIs, what they can call. So this got me thinking, and then I sort of wrote a script that passed all the markdown files in GitHub for Microsoft Graph. And then I created a page which says, okay, if it's sites.read.all, these are all the APIs that someone can call. So it's sort of like a different view into the Graph permission. So it's been really useful for a lot of the cybersecurity teams and the architects to really know what the permission does and what it is that they're doing when they're consenting to an access permission in the tenant. What are the things that developer can do? Are there the least privilege permissions that they can have if they need this? So this was just a stopgap. The product team is internally looking into having this built into our tools itself, so it'll make it easier. So for now, the site lets you find out, you know, whether you're giving big scary permission or whether, you know, is it the right fit for what the app is trying to do.
Actually, I'm really glad that you brought that up about least privilege. So so you do actually find things that could be, you know, violations of least privilege, because right now this is something that we're, you know, heavily focused on in Azure in general, you know, especially under if you look at the zero trust, sort of the three pillars of zero trust at Microsoft, one of them is least privilege. And we're certainly spending a lot of time looking at applications and looking at the privileges that they've been assigned. So this could be used as a tool, as a general tool, just to start saying, okay, you know, what does our set of permissions look like across the whole of our Azure environment? I mean, could you use the tool for that? I mean, is it designed for that, or is it really something that requires a little bit of interpretation?
This is a little bit of interpretation, and this one is only focused on Graph permissions, so not really the Microsoft Graph, so not really the Azure Graph, which is a slightly different API endpoint to the Microsoft.
Okay, all right. That makes sense. I mean, we're still reviewing Graph permissions as well, so okay, that's cool.
Yep.
So the next tool is ID Power Toys. What on earth is that?
Yes. So this, the key part of this tool is something I call the conditional access visualizer. So we have a really good Blade UI to create conditional access policies, and it's really easy to create them. But when you want to understand what your security config is in your conditional access settings, you know, it's the gateway to all of Microsoft, your Microsoft environment, right? Like whether you're going to Azure or into Graph or into any of the apps that you have set up, the conditional access policies are the gateway, and they define, you know, whether you do MFA or not, who is excluded and what's happening. I was helping a customer troubleshoot a conditional access at another time, and it was really hard to figure out what the policies were doing, because you have to click about 6 times or 7 times to get an idea of what one policy is doing. And conditional access is a combination of all of the policies put together. So it is really hard to figure out what exactly is happening in this customer's config when it came to conditional access. So that got me thinking about, like, how can I visualize it? Like, people might know me from my posts on LinkedIn and so on. I try to always make it simple and easier to understand with sort of a very visual way. And that got me thinking, and I came up with this whole way to export it into PowerPoint, where you get a visual view of the whole CA policy in one deck, in one slide, and then all of the CA policies put together. So you can quickly scroll through and see, okay, like print them up, put them up on a wall, and you can see what is happening in your tenant, what's configured, who is excluded from policies, what's included. And it's been quite popular with a lot of folks to help, you know, as they have 50, 100 policies to know what's really happening in their security landscape. It's with identity, we say identity is the new control plane. Conditional access policies are the way to get there. And this was just my contribution to make it a lot easier to visualize what's happening in your settings.
So, Meryl, I know because I have seen you post about it on socials and you have tagged me many times, thank you, that you also have a newsletter that you like to that you send out pretty regularly. Do you want to tell the folks who are listening about that?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So, like, I'm working at Microsoft and I read all of the internal things and I'm across what Entra does. But even I struggle with all of the different, just in my product, in Entra, all of the different features and new things that come out. And I read a lot of what IMVPs and the folks who write about Entra and the different features. I love reading that because these folks are in the forefront and they're deploying things, they come across issues, and they are thankfully like sharing their knowledge of, hey, I came across this, this is how I fixed it, or, you know, this is a better way to do it, and so on. And this, like, that knowledge and experience is not something that, like, I as one person can gain from what I do in my day job with the few customers I help. So it helps really to scale your knowledge. And I spend a lot of time reading and staying up to date and all of that. And I was collecting all these links. And then I thought, I'm sure others would find this useful as well. And I'm a huge fan of Hacker News. There's this Hacker News newsletter, which just sends you like a weekly list of links of interesting things. And every week I'll just scan it in like 5-10 minutes and click on things that interest me. So I was like, let me do this, because the community, we need like one place to go in and, you know, read about what happened this week in Entra. So that's how it started. I started putting together and sending it out. Like, I started last year. We have like 70 plus issues out right now. So every week I send out on Sunday for me in Australia a newsletter that lists, like, these are the new features that Microsoft officially announced. These are all the things that the community created and shared about Entra. And then I summarize some of my LinkedIn posts and things that I've shared as well. So just a way to share, like, hey, this new podcast came in about Entra, this new toolkit, someone released a new tool or a red team tool or a blue team tool. And I just sort of summarize that and send through. And yeah, it's become quite popular there. We have like more than 11,000 plus subscribers, and I get my son to help me out with it, so I get to spend some time with him as well. So it's been a really fun experiment. I didn't think I could keep it up, but yeah, we've been doing it for about a year plus now, and one of my highlights for the week is creating that and sending it out.
Yeah, and we'll pop in the show notes how you can go and subscribe to Merrill's newsletter if you want to.
Yeah, we'll add links to all the tools that we've spoken about so far as well. And there's other tools as well, so you'll see other tools that are up there. On the newsletter thing, you've made a phrase that I use a lot, which I'm a big fan of. But back in the day when I was first started at Microsoft, I worked on the C++ compiler and Windows for Windows developers, basically, back when everyone knew what a message pump was in Windows. And I wrote a newsletter because I had access to a lot of latest updates to the compiler, latest updates to Windows, tips and tricks from the SDK, all that sort of good stuff. And it was really appreciated by the development community. And I think, never underestimate how something that you think may be simple and quite straightforward to put together, underestimate how useful that is to other people. So yeah, I applaud you a lot for doing the newsletter. I know that a lot of people will find that of use.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a fun part of my weekend. I learn more than I learn so much more from all the MVPs and the folks who share content. They give their time freely to help us as a community, as an industry, to be better and help improve Microsoft products as well. So I'm super grateful for all of the time and effort folks put into all of this. And even going out and giving out presentations on all these different various topics. So I just want them to be highlighted. So this is my way of giving back.
So Merrill, what does a typical day, this is something we've started asking, I guess, what does a typical day look like for Merrill when you're at work? What do you get up to?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm remote. I'm in Australia and I'm 100% remote. So it's starts with we are in different time zones. So I'm in Australia and a lot of my team are in Redmond and actually spread across the globe. So my days usually start really early in the morning, and I have lots of meetings with teams, learning about what are the new features that we're building, talking with different feature PMs and so on. So most of that happens during the day, during my early morning. And then I get to, luckily for me, I work on the Zero Trust workshop these days. We are building some cool assessments. So I get to write a lot of PowerShell and a lot of scripts and go through, look at different settings in Entra. And I sort of get to hack things and build out all these things. So I do that for much of the day. We might be working on some new feature that I might be involved in. The last one I was involved in was this Entra external auth method, which was really fun. We brought in this integration from other vendors like RSA and Ping Identity, and integrating those with Entra in a plugin model. So I would sometimes work on features. So we would work on reviewing specs, and I bring the customer lens. I'm sort of the voice of the customer inside Microsoft, and I call out saying, hey, this won't work with customers. We should be doing this, and I look at ways on how we can improve those. I do spend a lot of time on the different forums helping, just replying to the comments people post and ask advice on. Then I do have in Kenya, some of our team are based in Kenya, where they do a lot of the graph and the PowerShell work. So evening my time, I do get to sync up with them a few times. And I love working at Microsoft because I get to do all this while I'm at home. So I can go drop, I have four kids, I drop them in school in the morning, then I go out for long walks in the middle of the day with my wife, and it's an amazing life and culture at Microsoft, and I really love this lifestyle. For me, it's I'm in retirement, doing the thing I enjoy the most, and I get paid for it as well. You can't ask for anything better than that.
That's fantastic. What would you like to leave our listeners with as sort of a final thought?
Yeah, so something we've been telling folks quite a lot is, do MFA. It's amazing the number of people who we still have tried to convince to do MFA and do MFA everywhere. And now you'd have noticed that Azure has started enforcing MFA for any access into Azure. I would say for everyone listening in, don't wait till Microsoft starts enforcing for M365, for Entra, for the security portals. Just do that now for yourself while the Azure MFA enforcement is rolling out. I know a lot of orgs have, delayed it. They had the option to push it back by 3 months. It's going to come for everything. So try to plan and do this as a, once effort across your org, and focus on getting that messaging out to your stakeholders and then to everyone else to say, let's just roll out MFA for everyone. Don't have exceptions. It's not zero trust when you do that. So that's the one message is get ready for MFA and do it all in one go for all of your users, for all of the apps. So you don't need to do 1,000 cuts and just do it, one at a time as Microsoft is enforcing it, if you have that luxury.
I think everyone who's been on that even touches Entra ID or touches identity or authentication and authorization, their final thought has always been use MFA. So there must be some credence to it, right? If everyone's saying it. No, I agree 100%. That's yeah. Great. I also think it's great that you're taking walks with your wife every day. I do the same, but that's mainly because the doctor told me I had to. But that's a whole nother discussion. Anyway, look, let's bring this episode to an end. Meryl, thank you so much for joining us this week. This has actually been a really... for me anyway, I've learned a lot. And I'm certainly going to dig into some of these tools. I'll be frank, my knowledge of Entra ID is not the best. I know the basics of it, but when it comes to anything beyond the veneer of Entra ID, that's when I sort of start to get lost. So I'll start to sort of dig around with some of those tools. All right. So again, thank you for joining us this week. Awesome. And to all our listeners out there, we hope you found this episode of use. Stay safe and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Azure Security Podcast. You can find show notes and other resources at our website, azsecuritypodcast.net. If you have any questions, please find us on Twitter at AzureSecPod. Background music is from ccmixter.com and licensed under the Creative Commons license.